This is the Talk of Fame Network on SB Nation Radio from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Clark Judge, Rick Goslin, and Ron Borges.
Welcome back to the Talk of Fame Network. A week ago, we spent time with two of the best pass catchers in NFL history. Now we're going to go over to the other side of the ball and sitting down with two of the best safeties, starting with our next guest, former Green Bay Packers star Leroy Butler. He's been on the show before, and you should know his credentials. He was a four-time Pro Bowler, four-time All-Pro, Super Bowl champion, All-Decade choice, and the very first, to make the Lambeau Leap. And he's a member of the Packers Hall of Fame. What you might not know, however, is that he's a Hall of Fame semifinalist for the first time in his career. And, Leroy, we couldn't be happier for you.
Oh, thank you very much, Rick. I really appreciate it. And I understand the process. I respect the process. But, again, I just want the safeties to start to try to get a little bit more, you know, recognition. And hopefully that'll change soon.
Yeah, tell me about it. There are way too few safeties, way and tight ends for that matter, yeah. Hall. Don't you think you should qualify for the Hall just for inventing the Lambeau Leap? I mean, look at all the players celebrating now. I mean, you were the original celebrator. Shouldn't that be alone to get you a gold jacket and a Boston can?
I think so. I mean, if you want to talk about relating to your fans and having a great fan base, you know, no one really wanted to sit in the north and south end zones in those end zone seats until I, you know, started that leap. Now everybody wants to get in those end zones. You get a chance to catch one of your favorite players. I just think it shows a lot, you know, the connection we have with our fans here in Green Bay. And everybody has a great fan base. But when you can, you know, do something where it connects the player to the fan, I think it's awesome.
How often do you hear the term Lambeau Leap during your
posts? Oh, my goodness. Huh? More than you know, Rick. I think people talk about it because when that is happening, the Packers are winning because you have to score. You have to score. And I think Robert Brooks actually made a song about it after that. And then next thing you know, people were, like, really tuned into it. I mean, and that's the good thing about it. When you're doing the leap, you're winning games and you're scoring touchdowns. Everybody's in a good mood.
Yeah. Okay, on to the Hall of Fame here. Where were you when you first heard you were a semifinalist, and what was your initial reaction?
Okay, I'll tell you, I was not in a good mood, Rick. The Packers had just got shut out by Baltimore. I think like 23-0. I'm riding back, and I got a phone call from a good friend of mine, and he kind of let me know. And I was like, yeah, listen, this is not that they'd be pulling a joke. I actually thought it was like Brett Favre joking with me to get my mood to change, but it wasn't. And when I found out about it, I was really, really, really excited. I really was, because I know it's a step process. And you got to be able to have people talk about some of the good things you've done. So this is part of the process. So, Rick, I was very, very excited.
Were you shocked? I mean, you've been a candidate for, what, 10 years, 10, 11 years.
Ooh,
were you shocked when you
found
out that finally they called your name?
And I know that, you know, kickers and safeties, people forget about them. But if you look in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, I don't think you can go to a great team and they say they not have a safety. So I was shocked in a little bit because I know I'm dealing with the smallest market. And I really didn't want people to think it was just Brett Favre and Reggie White in the 90s who put that Packer team, you know, back on the map. Because I was there before Reggie and Brett. I was there through the good and the bad times, not just come when it was good. So I felt good about it. And, again, I was shocked. But the more and more I thought about it, I thought that I really belong, you know, in the next process. And it made me feel real good.
We're speaking with Hall of Fame semifinalist Leroy Butler from the Talk of Fame Network, and you can find us on the web at talkoffamenetwork.com or on Twitter at Talk of Fame Net. And Leroy, from those great Packer teams in the 90s, there were only two starters, as you mentioned, elected to the Hall, Brett and Reggie.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you have Canton-worthy candidates like yourself and Sterling Sharp, who until this year had never even been a semifinalist. Did you ever find yourself asking, why? Why not us?
Well, yeah, I mean, Rick, that's a good question because I heard about the Lombardi years. They say there's too many Lombardi guys were in there. Right. That's why a guy like Jerry Kramer had to wait. And then I'm getting, you know, people saying, well, you know, Ron Wolf, you know, and Brett and Reggie took up all of the wins in the sale through the Green Bay Packers, then there should be nobody else. That's why I said, wait a minute. I know I'm dealing with the smallest market and things of that nature, but if you look at something I had to really deal with. In Super Bowl 32, you know, Shanahan could have talked about anything, but he said he designed his you know, whole game plan around stopping Leroy Butler. It wasn't Reggie White. It was Leroy Butler. So to me, that was an indictment on how good I thought I was at that particular time.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the thing is, 69% of everyone in Canton has a ring. You got a ring. That's one another check off the box. I mean, for, when you're a first-team All-Decade guy, that's almost a rubber stamp of a Boston Canton. And you're a first-team All-Decade guy. It makes no sense that that this is the first time you've actually been close to becoming a finalist.
And as players, that's what we talk about. We talk about how good you were, what kind of team you were on, but did you actually get your team, you know, to win a Super Bowl? So even playing a Super Bowl, I think it's fantastic. But when you win one, you're in an elite class. So for a decade, if you're the best at your position, I just think you should be talked about a little bit more. And I think sometimes it rings a bell. It rings true to some of the voters who are in bigger markets. They get a chance to see a guy play. But when you actually look at that list and you see some of your guys you familiar with, who he went up against, that makes a big difference, you know, to me as well. You know, who did you go up against and what era and things of that nature. So, and I'm going to tell you something, Rick. I was elated to make the All-Decade team because it makes me feel good. For 10 years, I was one of the best at my position.
No question. I'll give you a chance to toot your own horn here. What separated you as a safety, and what separates you from other Hall of Fame candidates at that position?
You know, that's a very fair question. I think it's a great question. If it wasn't for Ronnie Lott, there is no Leroy Butler. It's just not. I watch Ronnie Lott. He's the GOAT of the safety position. It's one thing that separated me. On third down, I covered the best tight end. You know, on second and long, I covered the slot receiver. I covered people. When people say what safeties had to do, I just want to see the tape of these guys covering people. I mean, because I never really wanted to be the safety that sits in center field, get a lot of picks. And no, I wanted to go out to the quarterback. I wanted to get sacked and things of that nature. Now you get a chance to develop people like Troy Polamalu, you know, and Dawkins and these guys who've done more than some of the guys with just a lot of interceptions, but they affected the game. I mean, did you have to go into the lab and the offensive coordinator? Did you have to draw up plays to avoid this guy? Almost like the Deion Sanders of safeties. You know, did we have to avoid this guy? And that's the way I prided myself, and that's what I thought I brought to the game.
You look at the fields of defensive backs on the semifinal list. There are seven of them, and it's loaded. You got Brian Dawkins, yes. John Lynch, Steve Atwater, who's coming up in a second hour, and you would say to realistically, and tell us the truth, how difficult do you think that makes it for you to get through to the next round?
I think it's very difficult. I think it's difficult because I think, you know, those guys, you know, Dawkins was a finalist, and maybe somebody didn't vote him in because they probably said, well, I need to compare his past to maybe Leroy Butler's. Wait a minute, we didn't put him in because of whatever reason. Uh-huh. Maybe we should bring, you know, Leroy Butler into the conversation, just find out, put these guys on equal playing field and see what happens, or just do the right thing and put two of us in every 3 or 4 years until we all get in.
Yeah, make it a catch if you're like wide receivers. So who who's the best safety ever come out of Jacksonville High Schools? You or Brian Dawkins?
Well, since I'm older, I'm going to have to say myself. You know, and then we can wrestle all about it, which he'll probably win. I just really enjoy watching. I used to call him the Shield, you know, because he had that shield and no one can see his face. But the guy affected games. And he played in a division, too. He played in a division. You play in Dallas twice a year, and you play in some of these tough, you know, Washington twice a year, where teams ran the ball and threw the football. And he put up very good numbers, you know. But in my era, in the 90s, it was three teams that dominated: Dallas, San Francisco, and the Green Bay Packers. And I had to go up against a Hall of Fame quarterback, seemed like, all the time. But for the most part, to me, was when I first got to Packers, they were terrible teams, a losing culture. And while I was there, the culture changed to a winning culture. And to win a Super Bowl after 30 years, to me, it really puts me in a good light.
You know, when you got to Green Bay, you were an All-America cornerback at Florida State. Were you reluctant to move when they said, we want to slide you inside?
No. You know why? Because Ray Rhodes Ray Rhodes. If it wasn't for Ray Rhodes, I wouldn't even be on this phone call. Mm-hmm. Ray Rhodes called me up, and he gave me the old buy-in speech. We're going to move you to make the team better. We want to draft Terrell Buckley, and I think we had a top five pick, and I'm going to move you over to safety. I say, we used to call him Ray Bob. Yeah. I say, Ray Bob, listen, I can't move to safety. I'm 195 pounds. He said, good, good, good. Don't gain any more weight, because on third down, I want to keep my regular defense in. If you can cover a third wide receiver, then we won't be so predictable. And after I hung up the phone, he called me right back. He said, if you believe me, you will one day be an all-pro safety. And he hung the phone up, almost like dropping the mic. And he was right. So I owe so much to him, because he had to sell me on that. Because some guys don't want to move. No, we'll just compete at cornerback. But he said, listen, you can play safety under 200 pounds. Because you don't need to do some of the things you think you need to do. I got linebackers for that. I need somebody to cover the third receiver, cover the best tight end, and cover the backside of the backfield. If you can do it, my defense can get to another level, and so will you.
Huh. Yeah, you know, when we talk about safeties, and this has been the problem over the years. When Paul Krause was up, he was the all-time leading interceptor with 81. And they said, well, you could never find him on tape. He didn't make any tackles. Now Steve Atwater comes up, who was a beast in the box, a great run player. And they says, well, he only had 24 interceptions. So where was he in the passing game? They're always, it's like they're looking for a nick. They're looking for something negative to say about safeties as opposed to say something positive.
Yeah, you're right about that, because, I mean, to me, I wanted to be like Ronnie Lott, be a great hitter, but I resulted in a great tackler. It's a difference.
Right, right.
So if you're affecting the game, I mean, I think Steve Atwater should be talking about just from the hit he put on Quentin Okoye. Nobody can take that guy down with one hit. I just, not to mention he's one of my best friends, I just think that it's a lot of positive go-to when you see a guy that's back there when receivers don't want to go in that area. You know, when receivers don't want to go in that area, to me, that's a guy should be talking about for the Hall of Fame.
You think this is a natural progression? You look at Ronnie Lott, Rod Woodson, Charles Woodson, yourself, guys that started a corner and moved inside. Is that becoming a natural progression now for defensive backs, great corners that get to play inside?
I think so, because, you know, you as a defensive coordinator, you know, when teams have got all this spread, they run this ride in the side, they always with three wide receivers and two backs, you need a guy to cover.
Right.
You don't always need to bring in a slot corner if your safety has coverage skills. So it's a natural progression, as you talked about. If a guy can cover and understand the leverage of a cornerback and still play with the smartness of a safety, that's the best of both worlds. I mean, you can do so many things. If you can do everything out of your base defense, you can send four or five guys after the quarterback and still cover, you know, the fast or big tight ends. Or, you know, I mean, I played against a guy, Ben Coates, 6'5", 240 pounds. I mean, again, I was 5'11", modestly, 5'11", you know, 195 pounds, but it wasn't about size. It was about being smart enough to be able to cover a guy regardless of how big he was.
How would you have covered Gronk?
Well, hoping that for some reason he gets hurt when he played with me. That's what I've been praying. Like, I don't want to play this guy. But the one thing real quick about Gronk, how I would have played him, I never would have let it been a lot of daylight between us,
right?
Because I can't win a pushing match. So I have to win that battle by being athletically sound.
Hey, Leroy, thanks for your time. And here's hoping we see you in Minneapolis. I mean, you certainly deserve to be in that room, and you deserve to have your career discussed. Thanks for stopping by.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to meeting you.
That was Hall of Fame candidate Leroy Butler. Up next, it's a 2-minute drill. You're listening to the Talk of Fame Network.